Very nice table.
Thank you. Okay, so I wanted to start. I had to be Mikatsu last night. I didn't have a watch, and I didn't see any clock. I had no idea how long I was speaking. I wanted to say over one mice. I was checking my notes over things I didn't say. So this is the one I want to say. And it's a good, I think it's a good chinuch aura to keep in mind. And we don't have to talk about that tonight if you don't want, if there are other things on your mind. Let's start with this maisa. So Rav Shiva always, when he spoke Yom Narayim, I don't remember a year where he did not break down crying. I don't remember once. And not breaking down crying. Now you can't, the one thing you can fake laughing, but you cannot fake crying, because the tears were overflowing, and the emotion, and he wasn't a faker, so, you know, so we would look forward to it, you know, because it shakes you when you see a grown man crying, you know, he wasn't trying to impress us, he was just saying all the Divrei Chazal, and he was got very emotional about it. And right after the Shmooze, so I went outside. I think I was in the hallway, and a friend of mine was there also. This friend of mine who was, always a little bit down, and the Reshiva came out of the restroom after the Shmooze, come back in, he sees my friend. I was standing there in earshot, and he started singing to him a song. The song was a grade school jingle. One of these things you sing when you're in fourth grade, or fifth grade, that I don't remember the tune, but how much you hate the school, and now it's a vacation, and who cares, and all my books go up in the air, and I couldn't care. So a song like that, he's on vacation, and because Yom Kippur spells vacation. And Rav Shiva, literally 2 minutes after this emotional outcry, you know, saw this Talmud in the hallways and just started singing him this tune. Okay, my friend was all, you know, smiling and laughing, and Rav Shiva like cheered him up, you know, and it didn't make it sound like, I'm, you know, oh, let me cheer you up. Rav Shiva didn't say that. He just sang him the song, like, it's wow, it's vacation time, and, you know, and Ila and you know, Marv and them, I'm on vacation for 2 weeks, yeah, you know. So, okay, so that's, you know, very special about the Rav Shiva, but I just wanted to say that a very important chinuch point is that this I read many times from the great Gedolim, from Rav Chaim Volozhin, that the main objective of a yeshiva is to raise the hearts of the dispirited and downtrodden. That's the main purpose of a yeshiva, to raise the spirits of the downtrodden, of the depressed. A yeshiva. I don't know. Any yeshiva. Yeah, that's the job. That is the job. So, this is something very much to Chaim Volozhin, someone big. I know. This goes back to the mother of all yeshivas. So this is a very important aspect of a rebbe. You know, that he has to keep his eye on the ball, because, you know, schools. Yeshiva is a school, so but it's a little more than a school. But everyone has to remember the first thing is you have to, you know, educate. People are paying tuition. You have to educate, and there's a lot to be said about that. I once went to it was almost one year. Probably from November time till Shavuos time. I believe it was every week met. Must have been 15 sessions. Rabbi Foreman, who I'd never heard of, when I was in Kolo, came once a week on Thursday night to give classes to members of the Kolo on classroom management. And I participated. I was in COLA. I never taught really a day in my life. And classroom management, I'm so excited because, you know, I don't want to go into chinuch. I have to know how to manage the class. Otherwise, the kids will eat you up alive. So he starts teaching, at the beginning, he starts teaching this curriculum, how to prepare a lesson, how to break down the lesson to an objective, and how to do guided practice, and how to check for understanding. And after 3 weeks, one of the fellows asked, you know, this all is very nice in preparing the lesson, but when are we going to get to the classroom management? So he says, we're going to get to it, And the next week he did more practices and how to give a lesson, then we took turns and how to write up a lesson, and how to use a plan book, and how to, you know, choreograph. That's when he taught us the attention span of, you know, children, what the attention span is, and how to prepare for that, and how to do a behavioral objective. How do you?
What was the attention span?
1 minute for every year you're old, maximum. And it maxes out at 18. So you should assume, if you're teaching 12th grade, you should assume the maximum attention span is about 10 to 12 minutes maximum. And they say, by the way, a rabbi's speech should be, you know, never more than 15 minutes, but 12 minutes, because the maximum attention span is 18, and no one's on maximum. So you assume halavai they should be beninim, which would be 9 minutes, and if they're a little more beninim, a couple people go 12 minutes. That's the so he kept doing this, and finally towards the end, it was almost like the last week, and then someone said, you know, the course was very good, but we never got to the classroom management. And Rabbi Feuerman, you know, said, ho, 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 ho. You know, he said, that is the classroom management. If you know how to deliver the lesson, you cannot, do not need to, that's your classroom management. So the lesson itself is very active. People are active. If the students are not active, then you assume there's going to be need for a lot of discipline, and which is really ridiculous. You know, like, why should you do discipline just because you don't know how to prepare a lesson? I'm thinking. Harv, right? Hope so.
No.
Huh?
Smoker.
They're not?
Don't eat it. Shouldn't have told us. Come enjoy the meal. Thank you, though.
Huh? Yeah. So that is, but all in all, you know, even though the school is, you know, you have to be able to teach a lesson, which Rabbi Feuerman taught me, that's where the classroom management lies. You know, what they also taught me, 90% of student misbehavior is teacher-induced. So,
thank you.
So that is pretty amazing when you're the teacher and you didn't prepare properly and no one's listening to you. That isn't the time to start yelling at every kid and saying that to the principal that they are, because why should they listen to you? You wouldn't listen to you if you were in their shoes. You would nod off or, you know, stop playing games. You wouldn't do that. So sometimes you just have to take your lumps. But at the same time, you have to also be like the Rashiva. You have to not lose your eye on the ball. To lift the spirits of the downtrodden and depressed, and to be able to first determine who is down. Sometimes it's hard to be able to tell how you determine someone is down. There's a lot to say about how to figure it out.
Yeah, the Ruben says of her story that Solanka was walking and he saw a lady that looked down. He was nervous she was going to commit suicide, so he spent hours and hours talking to her, and he convinced her not to commit suicide. So Ruben said that when they tell the story over in the yeshivish world, so people say, you can see that he still spent hours and hours and hours talking to a random lady to help her out. But Ruben said that there's another step. It wasn't like she was standing on top of a bridge looking over about to jump off. She was standing on the side. But if he looked carefully enough to notice that something was wrong, enough to be able to go over to her and
If a guy's not going to one of these classes, he doesn't want it, but let's say he doesn't have access to them. Is there like a book that you would suggest? Or maybe even if you are going to class, but also a book to read?
There's a book by Robert Mendler.
Mendler?
M-E-N-D-L-E-R. I'm sure it's you can Google that. Called Discipline with Dignity. And there's also, in terms of teaching, preparing the lesson, Madeline Hunter. I think she's the guru.
What's the name?
Madeline Hunter. She's the author.
What's the name of the book?
I don't know.
What's it about again?
The art of the lesson, the core, the crux of the perfect lesson.
What's the name again?
The name of the author?
Yeah.
Madeline Hunter. I'm not very well schooled in these books because I watched and spent hours with people who just modeled it. So I can't describe how to do it. Like, they called me a couple weeks ago, BRS called me if I could give a parenting workshop.
BRS?
Yeah, the shul in Boca, and Boca Raton Synagogue. So I said no because I don't know if I have anything to say on parenting. I couldn't imagine what I would say. I would get up and say, you should be a good parent. I couldn't think of anything to say, so I said no. I had no idea what to say, but if you read these books, if I had time to prepare, you get the book, then you know, summarize what the professionals say.
Can you use that home also, right?
You could model. If you watch someone model, I figured out that Rabbi Feuerman's been here since 2001. That's 16 years. I spend about 10 days a year with him, between being here and there, about 10 hours, minimum of 10 hours a day. So I spend 100 hours a year with him. Another, I figure 30 on the phone. 130 hours a year times 15 years. I know it's a lot of times. I just, you know, I gained so much from him, but it's good night to read and take a class. What I learned is I was pretty. I thought I was instinctively conditioned to be a good Rebbe. You know, and instinct was totally inadequate. Good instinct was totally inadequate. The best instincts are not good enough. You have to be schooled. It's like Moshe Kassir is a Tzal's joke. It's such a funny joke. His best jokes he could say in one sentence. That's the godless. He said a joke in under a sentence. His joke was, the boys in my shir asked me if I could play guitar. I said, I don't know. Give me guitar. I never tried. Give me guitar. I'll see if I could play guitar. If you didn't go to school to be a surgeon, no one has a half a minute thinking that, I don't know, maybe I could do surgery. Give me a scalpel and I'll see. You know, you wouldn't do that. But we send people into the classroom who have no experience, theoretically, and that's going to meet the same fate as the person who gets a guitar who never played guitar before. Unless you learn how to play the guitar, you're not going to play it right. So how many years of trial and error, how many kids will have to get regretfully shechted until you figure out which things worked and which things didn't work?
There's no concept of a person is naturally a patient person who's good at explaining things, making sure people understand that.
I am very clear. I can simplify once I understand something. The most complex insights into very simple form, and I'm very patient, and I don't get angry, and have, you know, self-control, and I connect with the kids. And it was woefully, woefully, like no havamina, that I could be able to overcome the rookie challenges in the classroom. That was my experience. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I thought it happens to be the reshiva was not into professional development. I asked him, "Nah, you don't need that. We don't need it." Mm-hmm. So, no, times didn't change. It's just that
style.
He meant not taking off from yeshiva for it. So, yeah, sure. If when you went to Miami, you should have gone, spent the summer going to classes and then walk into the classroom. I assume that's what he meant. You could learn on the job, but then that's when you have to go to classes, professional development classes. He's all for Rebbeim going to professional development classes.
Rebbe Goldenberg go to professional development classes? There's certain people that are...
It's so interesting that we were talking about this today in the office. The reshiva held that you have to be a very big lamdan to teach a high school shiur. You have to be like a reshiva, be a very big lamdan. But the reshiva held the same thing about teaching first grade. You have to be a very big lamdan to teach first grade. He held, the amazing thing about Rabbi Goldenberg and his sort of mentor, Rabbi Winder, Yudel Winder. Rabbi Winder was a musmach of the yeshiva, and a top guy in yeshiva, who graduated, got smicha, and then went to teach first grade. He revolutionized first grade teaching all across America. I think all yeshivas, Chofetz Chaim and not, I know there aren't too many Chofetz Chaim elementary schools, cannot all do Rabbi Winder's approach to teaching Aleph Beis. I have no idea. I have no idea. But he totally revolutionized the whole way that they teach first grade. How to teach reading and Aleph Beis. He was a big lamdan. He said a Torah Chabura on first grade Kriya. And Memela, he was able to revolutionize it. So when you take on, you're teaching whatever it is, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, you have to take it on. You're going to become the best. If you're teaching sixth grade, become the best sixth grade Rebbe in the country. So it's not good enough just to walk into class and make it through the day. You have to be the best sixth grade Rebbe.
So he was able to do that even though he didn't go to the professional classes because he was a lamdan.
I assume he was a lamdan. That was the first thing you need. So that's why I think the reshiva held you shouldn't take off from yeshiva to go to these classes. Diktuk. He told me I should go take the diktuk class. That's the only thing I didn't want to take. So the diktuk. But reshiva never said anything about when you're leaving yeshiva. He never said about it. Then, it's too hard. I'm teaching all day and I have to repair and I go to professional development. And I had to work very, very, very hard to overcome my inadequacy. I had to work very, very hard. I mean, I grew up a tremendous amount because I had to work very, very hard. But the assistant principaling, the principaling, that part came much easier for me.
So it sounds, just for clarity, so I can understand it. It sounds like, it is shaykh that a person could be a decent rabbi without the professional. You could be somewhat a little natural and do a good job. But the professional schooling will obviously make you better. So even you could have a natural tendency, so without going to school, you could do a pretty good job. But if you could do that without going to schooling, when you go to school, you're going to be much better.
I don't hold so much of having to go to a school with a classroom and a teacher in front and 20 people there. You could go to a great mechanech and watch his class. My first year, within a month, I went to visit three or four different Rebbeim in not in Chofetz Chaim schools, watch their classes. I can't say where, but one very top five yeshivas in Brooklyn. No. No, maybe they're top five, but that's not where it was. It wasn't a Chofetz Chaim yeshiva. And I want to see, I was teaching eighth grade my first 4 years. I want to see in eighth grade. So I went to this yeshiva. I had a chaver who was a rebbe in that yeshiva, not eighth grade. And I asked him, can you get me into the eighth grade rebbe so I could sit in? It's not really done in that yeshiva. No one visits, But I got permission. And I sat in, came in, they're learning Gittin. I went to the back of the room. I'd already been teaching a month. My first month was a disaster. And I sat in the back of the room. I had Chalishas Hadas, depressed. I thought I was going to leave. When I got back to Miami, I have to leave Chinuch because I was so nispal over how well these boys were learning that I said, oh my gosh, Miami is nothing. First of all, the boys were all wearing jackets. A couple of them were wearing hats when they learned. They were shuckling, and they were immersed in learning. I felt that I was sitting inside a mikveh, and they were learning, and I was like really down. Like the Rebbe is sitting by his chair, zugging, and I was like, oh my gosh, what are they doing right? It seems like, and I was sitting in the back and just watching it unfold. I wanted to just get up and leave and go hide somewhere and cry. But I was too embarrassed to get up here. I worked so hard to get into the classroom. I can't just pick up and leave. So I figured, okay, I have to wait a little bit longer. I'm waiting. Then the kid sitting next to me takes out a quarter and goes like this. Oops. But I don't do it. Anyway, and he did that. And he was good. Then he took out a second one. He did that. Then he took out a third one. He did that. Fourth. Fifth, he did six. Then he took out a seventh. And the Rebbe like looked up and he did it, but the Rebbe went like this. Then he wanted to take out an eighth quarter, but he didn't have an eighth quarter. Guys, anyone have a quarter? Everyone's checking. No. I had it. I reached it. I'm back in. I flipped up the quarter, and he did it. He got eight. So I was not one of the boys in the back of the room. Anyway, there were a lot of kids who were now totally distracted and watching this guy perform. And the Rebbe, no shy, you know, that back 10 kids had no shyness where the Rebbe was holding. Then he started doing a Tosfos, the Rebbe. There were two kids on the side who he was talking to. He only looked at two kids. He lost the rest. One guy he said out. The guy knew, like, it's time to go out. Looked like it was, the system was, they had the code. When I say out, it means get out. Secret code. Get out. You know, so at the end of the lesson, yeah, at the end, you could put ice in also if you want, or there's cold water in the fridge on the button. And then by the time the recess came, the Rebbe and I spoke, and I was feeling much better. There was much better learning going on out of a 45-minute learning session. First of all, he told me, he said, I do Tosfos, but only two or three boys are holding by that, but I, you know, we have to be Tosfos, so the other boys have to just, you know, writes on, you know, I don't know what he's talking about. And then anyone who was misbehaving, he made them stand. So if you were talking, stand. So that was very embarrassing for the kids. That's what he did. Then I went afterwards to my chaver, who was teaching first grade. In that school. So I went to teach first. I went to the first grade, and he is such a good Rebbe. I learned more how to teach eighth grade from that first grade Rebbe than the eighth grade Rebbe. Do you know what the first grade Rebbe does as a reward? If the kid's learning in his seat and he's being around the place, you know what the reward is?
What?
Fire? Sticker?
Chocolate?
You get to stand up. On the same day that one Rebbe embarrassed the kids by standing up if you misbehave, this Rebbe, any kid who was learning and he motioned to you, you get to stand up. The kids stood up so proudly. Everyone sees that I'm standing and I'm special. And he was mechabed the kids so much. So I learned from that you have to mechabed the kids very much. I learned that. And that's how you know, even if it's not school, that we were talking before, maybe you don't have time for school, but go visit a classroom. You know, I'm not saying to sub because substituting, it may be a chesed, and you get a little bit of experience of what to do, what not to do. You see where the challenges are, but only so then you could see how someone else does it and appreciate. Wow, Otherwise, if you never have a substitute class, you think it's so easy. I could just do it. The good thing about substitutes, you see that it's very hard to do. So then when you go to view someone, Rabbi Foreman told me this, the best training, better than any school, the best training is to ask a experienced good Rebbe. Nice, experienced and good. Just because someone who has 20 years experience doesn't mean they're good. It could be he never really was trained and now he has 20 years of bad habits. So you're looking at, just because he has 20 years and good, and ask if you could sit in on his class, and let's say once a week, you'll go like Sunday mornings for an hour, or wherever you, let's say you're in Kollel or somewhere, you know, you can work that out. You have an hour once a week that you go. And three or four times a year, or even two times a year, ask him if you could teach for the hour. And if could he stay and watch you and just give you pointers afterwards. That's worth its weight in gold. That's school. That's the equivalent of school.
So my father, he went to my grandfather's class for 10 days and watched my grandfather teach. And then the next 10 days, my father taught and my grandfather sent him back watching.
That's the best school. It really is. So, anyway, that's my...
What's up? I was mentioning books. Is Chaim Gnat's books recommended, or...?
I'm not so familiar with this, but when Rav Foreman comes, we could ask him. Yeah. He'll be here May 1st and 2nd.
All right.
So you're giving a class this time? What day of the week is May 1st and 2nd?
I believe it's Monday and Tuesday.
Ooh. We'll be back?
You still be here?
And is it Shiva then?
I confirm, Rabbi Dudovitz's wedding is the night before yours.
Where here or in Lakewood?
Lakewood. I think that's good.
I don't want to be there, right?
Huh?
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to have to come back because they already missed today.
Not everyone's going to stay for Rabbi Dudovitz, but...
It's the night after mine or before?
The night before yours. No, it would have been a disaster if they're like two nights apart.
Right.
Even on the same night, it's a disaster. I know people do that dinner. They run between this class and that class, and you end up going to no chasanas.
Oh, try to dance at two chasanas. Can't dance at two chasanas.
Oh. Great.
The dog used to get leftover food. So it'll be behind the muscle. The dog used to go to the chasana after the chasana to get the leftover food. And he found out that. One day there was a chasana, another chasana in town right nearby. So he ran there to get the food. When he got there, he already missed it. Then he went back to the other one. That's cool.
Okay.
What is it? You listen to the story. You say it's a poor clever. You lost this story.
Could I read up also and find the signs of how to tell a kid is depressed?
How do you tell if a kid is depressed? Some kids, their personality is to be very quiet and rude. Some kids' personality is to be loud. So,
right. So obviously, if you see altered mental status, that is very, very should be alarming. Even in Hatzalah, they teach you that altered mental status is the, you know, the biggest sign of trouble. So
altered mental status means change in character.
Change, yeah, total change in character, personality. That's usually a sign. But, you know, if a kid doesn't have friends and he's, you know, always by himself and doesn't want to participate in group activities, he really have to be choshesh. Rabbi Yoel Kramer used to tell you that a Rebbe, you have to find an excuse, any excuse to visit every home. You're driving a kid home once, oh, let me just say hello, you know, just knock on the front door, let me just say hello. You know, you make a Shabbaton, you go to this house, do an Onik Shabbos in that house. you have to try and see every home, because when you see the home, then you get to know who the kid is, and you can relate to him much better, even if you only go one time. I went to one house. I learned so much, you know, about the kid. Sometimes you a lot of kashas get answered, but sometimes you could help the kid more by understanding. And then you realize that there was one kid who I thought the parents were totally not with the program and pushing him the other direction, but I see it wasn't the case. They just dressed that way, and, you know, she didn't dress so tzniistic, but the mother, but they were really, was a very tardic house that they had, you know, so like, okay, that's very different, you know, so that could be very helpful. You know, so it's a, you have to, that's also another trick to try and, you know, get into the kid's world, so then you can also understand it. Also, the kid thinks you understand him, then he talks to you. Sometimes you also almost have to make it like you understand him before you understand him. So the way to have a kid think you understand him is just by, is not by talking, is by listening. You know, so good listening. I always like to quote Yitzi Turk, one of our alumni, who went to chaplain school, 2-year course. I asked him, "What do you learn in chaplain school? Like, what do they teach you how to say, whatever, Kalmali? I don't know what to do." He says it's a 2-year course on listening. I like to say that over a lot, because people, even to remind myself, listening is the best way to communicate.
How do you practice listening? What would I work on listening? What do I do?
Go to chaplain school.
Okay, because I don't have time to go to chaplain school.
There are probably books on, you know.
The same video book?
More complicated than just keeping your mouth shut and listening is more than just doing that at the breakfast table. You don't lead the conversation. You be
fine. Or peep back. No.
It's listening is not passive. It's active. It's active. It's, you know, validating. It's being totally immersed in the conversation through listening. Like, you're totally at the edge of your seat, you know, waiting to hear the next pearl of wisdom that emanates from his mouth. And you're sitting there with dripping saliva, that if he would stop right then, you would be totally devastated, like, you know, at the climax of the best movie, and then the power went dead, you would be like devastated. You just want to hear, you know, the next words. That would be very active listening. I once interviewed an English principal before Rabbi Levine. A very experienced fellow. He was, you know, I was interviewing someone like 30 years older than me. He was really, you know, it was an experience for me. But he told me at the conclusion of the interview that I conducted one of the best interviews he's ever seen. He himself was a principal and a superintendent and ran schools. So yeah, I got hired, but we hired him. And we were very lucky to get him. You know, he could have gone anywhere. He had been retired for 6 years, and he decided to come there. Anyone would have taken him. Very hard to find good principals. He took the job because he said at the interview, which lasted for about an hour, he did 55 minutes of the talking. And he didn't realize it till the end. He was doing all the talking. And he said, "That's amazing." So he knew right away he's going to get along with me. I guess that he'll do all the talking. But it wasn't like he was such
a rabbit to do that.
He just didn't, you know, because I wanted to hear. I really wanted to hear what he had to say. So, like, I saw on his resume that he was in. You know, he got his master's in education somewhere. And then it says I saw like the next thing, he was like principal of some of this. I said, "Whoa, when did you ever teach?" So He said, no. He went straight from college to principal. So I asked him just the obvious question, how was that experience and how'd you get the job? Wasn't that gutsy? Just take a job as a principal. It's gutsy to take a job as a principal after you've taught and understand education and see. But who's going to give you a job as a principal to run a school if you've never been in a school? And just to take a job as an administrator in a school, they don't give it to you if you don't have experience. He thought that was a great question. He was dying to tell me. Because you know, that was like about his life. The best thing to get someone to talk, to set up a situation where you could listen, is you find the question that the person, that's something very meaningful to them that you ask them about. So let's say, for example, I don't know if there's a good example, but let's say you're on a date and they, you know, so you live in, okay, I'm just making something up. You live in, I don't know, Miami? How long have you lived there? So she says, my whole life. Okay, that's a shtickle boring. But they says, oh, you know, we moved here when I was, you know, 10. Oh, where did you live before that? Oh, how come your family moved? So there you go. That's a life story there. So it could be that's where, you know, it's not interrogation. It's just you care. You care to know, and you throw in something in the eye. That must have been hard to move and leave your friends. That's like another opening, you know, dangling, you know, participle. You just like that. You're not even asking a question. You're asking the question in this, like a sentence. That must have been very hard. You're stating like a validation of a feeling. That must have been very hard to leave all your friends. You didn't even ask a question. Now the person's dying to tell you, yeah, oh my gosh, it was terrible. I had no friends. I was crying every night. And, you know, so that could also be, you could practice all these things if, you know, if you're counselors in camp. There is a good opportunity. I had a...
You recommend it on the fellow guys in Yeshiva?
I do it all the time with fellow guys.
Yeah. In Yeshiva? I mean, if you... To be a good friend, of course you should. But you know, you shouldn't think you're practicing on them. I noticed that that's a new shirt. When did you get it? You know...
6 years
it must be... it makes you feel... must make you feel good to wear a nice shirt like that. You know... Dale Carnegie has the. I said this once, but I somehow when I look at David Holtzman, I remember that I did say it.
But
yeah, this guy going to the bank. Didn't I remember discussing this once? But it's could that repeat? And he when he went into a bank and he said, you know, I'm gonna make that teller feel good. I'm just gonna make him feel good, and. When I get there, he decided. And he got there, he said, Tim, that is one of the nicest ties I have ever seen. Congratulations. And, you know, this is such a bright bank. I love coming here, and your service is beyond, and made the person feel very good. And Carnegie writes in the book, they asked, isn't that just flattery? Like, that seems to be dishonest. And he answers back, to those critics, and says, "It's you know, is there something wrong with making someone feel good? You should, right? We should try and make people feel good.
So, means.
No, there's not. There's no dishonesty. There's no dishonesty. He wanted to be a good citizen. So he sees the teller working very hard,
and it's not the best day in my life, and it's not that I love coming to the bank."
He didn't decide before this complimenting his tie that it was ugly. He was find something that he was going to compliment them on. So I decided that once that I was going to get to befriend my garbage man, the guy who picks up my garbage every day, twice a week. So, because I had just come from Dr. Shames Labaya. And they spoke about how when he passed away, the garbage man was so devastated. And they have a story about Dr. Shames that when he was Like one day he arranged with his whole office to call UPS that we need a late pickup at the end of the day, we need something delivered, but we need the latest possible pickup. And when the guy came, so they scheduled like a 10 to 5 pickup of a package at his office. The same guy usually has a route, so he came. But it was the guy's, that Shames knew that it was the guy's birthday and that he lived alone, his mother wasn't well. He felt so bad for him. So he had a birthday party scheduled at the office at the end of the day. So when the guy came in, they went surprised and they threw him a birthday party. So, you know, all these stories by Dr. Shaves, he's an amazing man, the chesed. So I said, you know, I want to get to know my garbage, you know, I got a chesed, I want to get to know my garbage guy. He picks up the garbage, he never sees anyone. And so I went outside. I like, you know, I know when he comes, it's not always inside. And so I heard them coming down the street, I went outside and I saw him and I said, are you the one who picks up my garbage every day? I have to thank you so much because some days I put it out the wrong way and it's overflowing, you always take it. And I reached into my pocket, I took out a $10 bill, which I had prepared. And I said, I just needed to say thank you. That's why I'm out here today. Thank you so much. So the guy, you know, took the $10, he thanked me, we shook hands and we talked for a minute. From that day on, I am the only house on the block where after he takes my garbage, he gets out of his truck and he wheels my garbage can back to the side of my house. Not only that, if I ever forget to bring my garbage can out to the front, which I don't think is it's fair to ask him to do that, he comes and he gets my garbage can, takes it to the front, gets back in the truck, puts it in, and then puts it back, and then he brings it back. Ada Yom Hazeh. I never see him. Once a year, I make sure I'm outside when he goes and I give him my $10. Like, I have to thank you again. And one time...
Basically,
you're buying users. No, I did Lishma.
You originally did it as a Karsa Tov.
I did it with a Karsa Tov. And then I told him once that I'm having trouble with my hip. You know, I had hip surgery, but before I had the hip surgery, I told him. So he says, you know, my wife's having that. I did some research. I said, really? If you know any, let me know. The next week, he came and he rang my bell and he dropped off like these articles on my hip, and I saw him the other day. He says, you know, he tells me that there were a couple of weeks I didn't see a garbage out. I said, yeah, I was sick. I had my gallbladder out. He goes, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. The guy, you know, I have a silver Camry, which is a pretty popular car. You see a lot of them around. But he knows my car. He sees me anywhere in North Miami Beach. I get the big hunk, you know, that 18-wheeler trunk. He hugs me. He waves to me. I saw him the other day. You know, he came and said, you know, how you feeling? You should take care of yourself. You know,
is Rabbi saying that if you ever want to earn someone's respect, you have to pay them $10?
No, just, you know, just
showing him you care.
Yeah, just show him you care. Yeah.
So it wasn't $10.
I really, it
that's
is.
A shame.
You know, it says when a person has garbage, it's overflowing. It's like. It's like Grafshel rage. It's even you allowed to take it on Shabbos. You allowed to take it out. So it's when you come back and like there's no garbage around. Like, oh, you really are Makar Tov. Like, it's not a very enjoyable job. But I just want to tell you one other thing. The Rosh Yeshiva, when I was debating whether I, you know, should go to college, not go to college. So I spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva. And the Rashiva said, no, you're going to go, you can get make a pronounce in chinuch. But so Rashiva recommends going to college. He says, well, it depends. If chinuch doesn't work out, because who's to know if it will work out or not? You know, the Rashiva told me that, even me. Who says, you know, that's why I was so, you can't know if it's going to work out. Let's say it doesn't, this is what my parents were always nervous about. You know, if it doesn't work out, said, yeah. Are you ready to go be a sanitation worker? You'll drive around picking up garbage. Now, just so you should know, they make a very good living.
Yeah. Good benefits, too.
They're union workers. They're probably making 70, 80...
100,000.
$100,000. Full benefits. You have full health insurance. Full health insurance.
So worth it.
And you after 30 years, you get a job when you're 20. And after 30 years, you can retire when you're 50. And you can just retire. You get a life pension. And so the Reshiva asked me, if it doesn't work out, are you ready to be a sanitation worker? I mean, you'll make a panasa, but it's not the most dignified of, you know, jobs. And I said, sanitation worker. No. I'm not going to do it. So then I think you should go to college. Now, I'm not telling you to go to college. I'm just saying, like, person has to have their eyes in their head. Like, you know, made other things. You'll go into business or whatever. Each person's different. Yeah. Some people might say, you know, I'll be a sanitation worker. You know, I think if I had to do it over again, I would probably not go to college because I was such a waste of time.
What was the story?
It was such a waste of time because I went for accounting. I didn't ever use accounting, and 5 years worth of taking classes and not using it is a waste of time. So it would be much better for me to say, okay, I'll work as a sanitation worker. That's so bad. You know, you drive a truck, you get to honk the people. I'm probably the only person in a 5-block radius that talks to him. What was your question?
Isn't there a story you and your brother used to, there was a professor that didn't know there was two of you, used to take turns?
No. The story is that my brother was going to Adelphi University in Manhattan once a week, and he gave a take-home final, and to give the take-home final, my brother said, It was over in the beginning of July, and my brother was going to camp. I was still in Forest Hills. I didn't go to camp. I only went to the end. So he was going. I'm not sure why, but he was going to camp, and I wasn't. And the teacher was makbid that the take-home final be submitted on the last day of class, personally, even though there's no class. He had to personally hand it in. So why? Because he wanted to, he had it personally. So he said, I'm going to be in the mountains. Can I have someone give it to me? No. You have to hand it personally. So we held it that you can't be mocking the thing, which makes no sense. So you can't be mocking on something that is, you know, paid. You know, you can't have someone else do your test for you. Right. But, you know, I know that's what we paskin. We didn't ask any shout-outs because to us, it was Pashut. So my brother asked me if I could go pretending that I'm him and personally hand it in, as he said. So I said, yeah, but I have to know who it is. Like, I can't walk by him and not know who it is. So what does he look like? Because you don't have to know who he is. When you go into that classroom, he'll be there. I said, but let's say he's not in the classroom. Okay, that'll never happen, but okay, here's what he looks like. So give me a whole description. Okay, so I got there. It's true I got there like 10, 15 minutes late, but he should still be in the classroom. Anyway, I'm coming up the steps, and a guy starts walking down the steps. I see a man who looks like he could be a professor. I quickly take out my notes. Okay, a white hair, 4 strands, a little bald, little pot belly, never wears a tie, you know, wears a brown belt and nerdy shoes. He said,
every
brown belt. Then I looked down and said, nerdy shoes, that's gotta be him. I said, how you doing? See, I made it. He goes, you're a man of your word. I handed him the paper and he left. And I was a man of my word. And that's the story. And I handed him. That was the story.
And also, what was?
Oh, that's true.
Didn't you also used to? You got money for having like a certain club, and you had a mincha club. You used to buy donuts on Rosh Chodesh because the college gave money for it. You know what I'm talking about?
No, what is it? What happened?
That's a good story.
Talk about that.
What's the story?
I'm not sure. I remember something like that. But this, like, I forgot what it's called. When you have like your own club, so they give you money for it. So I thought a bunch of you had mincha club, and every day you'd have a mincha. Or donuts or something, or mishchodesh. Okay. Or Kabbalah concerts.
I'll tell you what I do remember. That Truro College what convinced me ultimately to go into chinuch. Because I was taking this accounting class at Truro College, intermediate accounting, which is already advanced accounting class. And he teaches it, I'm sure he teaches intermediate?
He teaches
it
every
time. Okay,
PhD.
Okay, so intermediate accounting is one of the advanced classes, so it's that little shtickle that separates the men from the boys. So they had this fellow, a professor teaching it, but the professor was a, you know, like a yeshiva guy, you know, white shirt, tzitzis. Yeah, from, he looked exactly like Rabbi Chait. He looks like Rabbi Chait, you know, that whole build, almost exact beard. He looked like a yeshiva man, you know, you see him in he's like the classic guy who's davening in the shtiebel, you know, but he was a teacher, professor at Thoreau College. He wasn't Hasidish, but it was a bald buzz. He probably had a job in accounting somewhere and he taught at night to make extra money. Anyway, in the middle of class, he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, give me a minute. I should demonstrate." Because this is what got me into chinuch, so it's worth demonstrating. So here's the class. "I'm so sorry, give me a minute." He literally, we gave him a minute. In less than a minute, he finished my essay. And he turned around and then just continued, like. And I said, "Oh my gosh, that's going to be me. I'm sure of it. If I go into accounting and I get a job and I'm in a situation, maybe I wouldn't do it in front of people. I'll be too embarrassed in front of people, but privately, I'm going to do the shuffle. I'm going to, oh, I have to go somewhere. I have a minute." And then three steps back, and good to go. And I said, "Gonna be, that's it. I'm not going to do that." And that right then I said,
"Sorry, you quit after."
I didn't quit the college, but in my mind,
I
wasn't gonna. I made up my mind. I can't do that, because he was an erlicha person. Most people just wouldn't have daven. I think it may have been better if he didn't daven. Could be his pater. He's you know, a pole. He's osei ben lachta. He's not allowed to stop perhaps to daven mincha. So he's got daven whatever extra shmonesh. No, I don't want to paskin. I don't want to paskin for him, but you know, mehechi tesi. He should have daven mincha then. I don't know if it was the right thing, but it was. I'm glad he did, because it convinced me that, you know, I'm sure people do that and worse. That guy's a tzaddik. But, you know, it's like a build bracha to be in yeshiva. You daven like three tefillahs in yeshiva. Like, we don't realize it's a big schus to be in yeshiva. Like, at least the tefillahs that we daven, you know, we can daven as like a mensch. It's a big bracha. Very big bracha.
Does Rebbe think the bigger Baal Mussar a person is, so that helps him with all the, I guess, areas of being mechanech, kids? Bigger Baal Mussar are the Jew.
I'll tell you something even bigger Kiddush than that. I heard this from a wise chaver. He said to me that every ounce of mussar that you've ingrained in yourself of kvishas, hakas, and savlanus, and being mevater, and being kind, and bal chesed, he needs every ounce of it just to stay happily married. It's not like his wife, there's something wrong with her. Every ounce of mussar that you have, you'll be that much happier as a, you know, as a husband, as a, you need every ounce of it. I'm sure everyone, ask any married person, they'll all tell you the same thing. You need every ounce of it. So there's never any surplus. So, and I assume sometimes there's deficits. You know, I'm learning a sefer now with Michael Mirsky. It's a sefer that was written on by Rav Shraga Newberg, who's one of the mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore. Yeah. And he wrote a sefer on Nisuin and, you know, Hashkafas Shalom Bayis. That's what it basically seems on it.
Well, I heard about sefer.
What's it called?
I know, I have it in my office. I learn with him every Sunday morning, you know, on my phone. It's a great sefer. He puts so much stock into how to...
He's
a mashgiach.
Your brother does financial?
Yeah, yeah. He's the one of the first year rebbeim. So, that's a huge thing. So the answer to your question, of course, you need every ounce of mussar. What did you say it for? It makes you a better what? I don't know, a better Rebbe, but yeah, it makes you a better, forget about Rebbe, it's a better person, friend, everything. A lot of marriage, Shalom Bayis marriage are all, you know, just being mevater and not caring.
Don't shaykh to be a good Rebbe if you go to all these classes but you're even on such good minos? Or it's not going to work? Should I
have to
take a guy?
Yeah. You know, someone with bad midos could be a great rabbi. Azus, someone who has Azus and chutzpah. The kids find that so entertaining.
You could also ruin a kid.
No, not that you do it to them, but if a person knows he has bad midos, he has to use it latov. You know,
first it was bad. One day he'll slip.
Not that he has bad needles now.
One day he'll bad slip and you should say something to a kid and send the kid flying.
No, you can't do that.
What's an example?
Exactly.
Yeah, what's an example of that?
A guy who has a lot of chutzpah. He has a lot of chutzpah, so that guy could make fun of
Christianity.
Yeah, I don't want to make fun of the religion. But yeah, you make fun of the craziness of the world. We had a situation once in the yeshiva, one of the yeshivas I was consulting with, and the boys came and complained that the Rebbe, didn't complain to me, complained to the principal, that the Rebbe is a hypocrite because he leaves davening, and they see him sometimes drinking a coffee, you know, outside, and sometimes they see him go into his car, and he's listening to the radio, and he's a hypocrite, and how can he be a Rebbe? So I heard this story years later. I told the story over to Rabbi Feuerman, and I wanted to know what did he think, you know, should a principal do in a situation like that? He says, because like he has maybe a bad role model. He says, no, that's not the problem. He's a bad role model. The problem is that the boys hate that Rebbe. They hate him. Hate him? They didn't say they hate him. They just say they don't respect him. They say, how do you know they hate him? So it's a chloride they hate him. This is vintage for you, man. You know, you tell him one thing and he figures out the rest of the story without you telling him. He knows they hate him because most kids, they go out during davening and they'd love to go out to the car, and if they have a Rebbe who's like one of them, they'd love him. And the fact that they're using that as a raya, how could you respect a Rebbe like that? It's a raya that they hate him. I did research and I found out that they hated him. They hated him. He didn't have good midas. You know, it could be he didn't treat them properly.
What should a yeshiva do about an incompetent rabbi?
Every yeshiva has incompetent
rabbi. Should they let him go?
If yeshiva would let go, if, right? I was trying to think of a nice way to say
it. But no, like an actual incompetent, not like everywhere. Like a real incompetent rabbi.
What does that mean?
Maybe that's just not good.
The kids hate him.
The kids hate him. It's not working.
You know, if it's... there are rules of what you could do, what you can't do, and there's such a thing called the chazaka and everything, but if a Rebbe is ruining a kid, he's screaming at them, he's being disrespectful to them, so then the yeshiva has to tell him that you can't do that. And if he continues it, then it could be they have to let him go. Could be. But, you know, we believe that the same way we try and, you know, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh, the same way you have a Talmud, the first time the Talmud oversleeps and doesn't come to Minyan, you don't throw him out. Hey, you came here, you said you can come to Minyan, you weren't by Minyan, so I'm sorry, find a different yeshiva. You think it's a little bit harsh. So the same thing, whether the Rebbe is entitled to just as much, at least as much, you know, if he made a mistake, so okay.
No, but it's his achrayah.
Yeah, he's getting paid.
The Talmud doesn't really have an achrayah. He's an achrayah to himself, not to the older. He's not dealing with anyone's future, with the future of anyone's Yiddishkeit except his own. A Rebbe is being makakal achar, but he's not doing his job.
Yeah,
it's
but...
No, he's not. Okay, now my girl's that kid's doing that.
Is there a thing for sometimes, like if a Rebbe's been a Rebbe in a yeshiva, so even if he's not the best Rebbe, and you can get a better Rebbe, but you already have him, see? It's not so possible to let a Rebbe go just because he's not such a good Rebbe.
Correct.
Is that a very heavy throne?
Yeah. Yeah, even halachas that dictate it. There's such a thing in chazaka, you may not be able to let him go. Now, just because you can get someone better, but that's why it's very important for a yeshiva to have a professional development culture, because eventually, even if it's not even the first 5 years when he's a rookie, he's all excited, but it could be after 15, 20 years he's going to get a little bit, you know, even not burned out, but slow down and start not be as ambitious to try and grow. But if you have a culture in the school of professional development, he can constantly get better. And that's why if the culture is growth and everyone's always working on themselves and they're talking to each other and have become better, so then the likelihood of it happening in that yeshiva is much less likely. There are certain yeshivas where people burn out much sooner than other yeshivas.
Basically, because
they're doing it on their own? Yeah, because they won't do it on their own. If everyone's working, so it's exciting. Like, okay, it's not embarrassing to work. I heard a good word. This is, could I remember? In the airline industry, they always find out what happened and why the plane crashed. Always. Kemat, always. They got the black box, but even without the black box. So there was one airline, it was a terrible crash, and they found this big article, and they found out that when the mechanic was tightening a particular valve, It caused a crack in one of the pieces of plastic nearby that at 30,000 feet and 550 miles per hour, that plastic didn't hold up and it cracked, and that's what caused the crash. So when I heard this story, I was asking Dr. Jacob, we were talking about it. He said, wow, that's amazing that mechanic, like they figured that out. How did they find the mechanic who did it? What happened was they interviewed the mechanic. The mechanic said he heard something, but he didn't see the crack. So he figured nothing happened. But it turns out there is a crack in that kind of plastic that you don't see, that at 50,000 miles expands and cracks. So I said, why did the mechanic even report it? Like he basically made himself the cause of the crash. He says, in the airline industry is unique, that it's no fault. They just want to find out what the problem was, and we're so happy we just find out what the problem is. And this is the idea, even with a teacher, a Rebbe, you know, if a Rebbe feels that you're not going to bash him, like a principal walks into a classroom, if the teacher feels that you're going to, now you're going to write him up, and you're going to put a note in his file, and now you've been warned, that causes a lot of stress, and that causes burnout too. But if the principal is going in, he's only going in to offer help to the teacher or to the Rebbe. So then the Rebbe has an opportunity, as someone to watch him, to give him, encouragement.
What about my Talmidim? Should it be the same way?
The Rebbe should be the same way. That if he sees something, the Talmud should feel like the Rebbe's pointing out something good. Not bad that, you know, you're learning very well today, and you would do so much better if you would bring a Gemara. It would be so much better to say it over in a positive way. So,
do you think that sometimes when people are when people are very positive, like sometimes it comes off, especially when you're dealing with older kids, they understand when you did something wrong and you come off very positive, like it's just like sarcastic. I'm not sarcastic, but like, yeah, it's fake. Fake teachers talking down to you. Okay.
So if it's not if it's not genuine, then maybe. But if it's genuine, why would anyone feel that that's?
You did a great job paying attention today, but it would help if you brought a Gemara to this.
I was exaggerating, but yeah, you can't do that. That's patronizing. You're right. You can't do that. I was exaggerating my point, but you know, I see it's hard for you to bring your Gemara. What you could say. Is there anything I can do to help you? You're always living in the wrong spot.
It's also like, there's not.
Because I
pick up your Gemara, you
have a,
in the base
no, but no, but the, some kids have executive functioning. They can't. They can't remember their Gemara. They can't remember in their pants. One student told me once. He's a lift.
Executive functioning.
Executive functioning. It means organization. You know, he just dysfunctional. One guy told me, you know, Rebbe, I couldn't come to yeshiva today because I was on my way to yeshiva and I realized I forgot my pants.
Was he dreaming?
No, he was serious.
I mean that guy.
You like that.
No, but I'm saying you think it's not possible, but it is. There are kids who just forget everything, so. If the Rebbe realizes that he doesn't ever remember to bring his Gemara, he could say, you know,
I see you come to say stupid and realizes and that something stupid. It's very obvious that it's stupid.
I mean,
the only way to address it is that was stupid what you did. If you try to make it, oh, I see you're trying, when it was clear he wasn't trying.
Even when I was speaking to, even if I'd be speaking to a, if I would be speaking to a Rebbe, even if I was speaking to a principal that I was not happy with, I would do it in a very positive way. So why would it be different for a student who's an old 8th grade or 10th grade or 12th grade? Everybody wants to be treated that way, you know. I guess the worst criticism is that I work so hard and the only thing you could say to me is something negative, you know. People are very sensitive. You have to be careful, you know, giving criticism is very, very hard. People can't handle too much criticism. Rashiba used to say people made out of tissue paper. Then he said tissue paper. Towards the end of his life, I was here. He had a lesser term. Tissue paper was like very thick, comparatively to what the term he found out afterwards.
What was the term afterwards?
I know it wasn't there. I forgot.
Cobwebs.
Jellyfish.
On Blue Wednesdays, it was jellyfish.
I'm falling asleep. I'm falling asleep. Okay.